before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. And thanks, as always, to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of good segments and interviews this month, but let's get started, as always, with beer news. Alaskan Brewing opened an expanded tasting room on Saturday, November 3rd, in a grand opening celebration that also marked the 30th anniversary of one of its most renowned beers, Smoked Porter. The newly renovated space is part of the brewery's expansion in a newly acquired building on Commercial Boulevard in Juneau, part of its Lemon Creek Brewing and Tasting Room facility. Quote, "We've been working on the expanded facility since we purchased the building earlier this year, and we've put a lot of thought into how to give our visitors the best possible experience when they are here at the brewery," said Andy Klein, communications manager for Alaskan Brewing. "We are now able to serve our beer samples in a roomier and more comfortable space with the ability to expand the varieties of the beers we are pouring," end quote. Klein said an example of those expanded options was on display during the grand opening celebration as the staff served a vertical tasting flight of the legendary Alaskan Smoked Porter to mark its 30th release. Quote, "This beer has been a huge part of our history and has been recognized with 21 awards from the Great American Beer Festival alone, more than any other beer. So we are going to break out some vintage Smoked Porter to compare with the new 2018 release, as it has a unique ability to age beautifully and bring out subtle new tastes through the years," Klein remarked. "The expanded space is a perfect opportunity to celebrate 30 years of Smoked Porter and show off the varieties of beer that our expanded taps will allow us to serve our visitors." Klein said, "While the expanded space will give plenty of room for more Alaskan Brewing Company gear, the big focus with the space is beer, including growler and crowler fills, and giving a chance for people to taste a wide variety of beers with more experimental offerings like barrel-aged and small-batch brews." Quote, "We absolutely love the opportunity to talk to fans about our unique brewing process and our focus on innovation in how we brew and what we brew," said Klein. "When people come in for a flight of beers in this beautiful new space, we will have the opportunity to educate them about why we feel our beers are so special, and they will have the opportunity to try more varieties than ever," end quote. With 20 taps and plenty of room to try samples with friends, the expanded facility should provide a great space year-round, even during the busy tourist season. In recent years, with more visitation to the Juneau area, at times the available space at the brewery's existing tap room could get overwhelmed. Quote, "The space we have always used was expanded as much as possible through the years in response to demand, but we had to face the fact that we simply outgrew the space during the busy summer months," Klein said. "Over 30 years ago, the tasting room started under a flight of stairs, and the footprint has increased to accommodate a lot of growth. But now we have a showcase tasting facility that will allow for our staff and visitors to have a great experience together throughout the year," end quote. The expanded tasting room is located at 5362 Commercial Boulevard, right on the way to Costco and Home Depot in Juneau. Sierra Nevada Brewing of Chico, California, has released the following statement to the press. Quote, As many of you are aware, Sierra Nevada Brewing Company and our surrounding communities are in the midst of dealing with the still active Camp Fire. Even though we are all living moment to moment trying to figure out who is safe and if our homes have been spared, the beauty of the human spirit still shines through. We have been flooded by offers of support, from a simple "I am here" to generous offerings of financial and physical support. There are many opportunities, both immediate and long-term, to help those affected. For immediate support, there are many nonprofit and government agencies whose sole purpose is to help those experiencing disaster. Rather than duplicate those efforts, we will instead focus on connecting those groups with people who need help. For long-term support, we have set up a Sierra Nevada Campfire Relief Fund supported through the Golden Valley Bank Community Foundation. The brewery is seeding this fund with an initial $100,000 to get started. Once the fire is out, we will distribute all donated money to partner organizations that are dedicated to rebuilding and supporting the communities that have been affected. We appreciate the tremendous amount of support and compassion shown from folks around the world. With the brave men and women risking their lives fighting this fire and the outpouring of support from communities near and far, we know we are on the path to healing and rebuilding," end quote. In addition, Sierra Nevada has created a beer called Resilience IPA. It has invited all other craft breweries to brew a version and sell it at their pub or tap rooms, with 100% of the proceeds going to support those impacted by the campfire. Sierra Nevada will supply the recipe, tap handles, coasters, posters, a social media kit, and recognition for their support. It's also working with many malt and hop suppliers to provide or reimburse participating breweries for the cost of the raw materials. Bear Paw River Brewing of Wasilla and Arco's Brewery of Palmer have already announced that they will be brewing batches of Resilience IPA to help those impacted by the fire. Many craft breweries around the country have also announced that they will be brewing this beer, and other breweries across Alaska will likely be following suit. Pabst Brewing Company and Miller Coors are going to trial, with hipster favorite Pabst contending that Miller Coors wants to put it out of business by ending a long-standing partnership through which it brews Pabst's beers. The case has high stakes for Pabst, whose lawyers argue that the company's very existence relies on the partnership with Chicago-based Miller Coors, which produces, packages, and ships nearly all of its products, which include Pabst Blue Ribbon, Old Milwaukee, Natty Bow, and Lone Star. Miller Coors, meanwhile, says it's not obligated to continue brewing for Pabst and that Pabst doesn't want to pay enough to justify doing so. The trial in Milwaukee County Circuit Court began on Monday and is scheduled to run through November 30th. Pabst's attorneys have said in court documents and hearings that Miller Coors is lying about its brewing capacity to break away from Pabst and capture its share of the cheap beer market by disrupting Pabst's ability to compete. At a March hearing in which Miller Coors tried to have the lawsuit dismissed, Pabst's attorney Adam Paris said, "Stunning documents obtained from Miller Coors show that it went as far as hiring a consultant to, quote, figure out ways to get rid of us," end quote. Miller Coors has called that a mischaracterization of the consultant's work. The 1999 agreement between Miller Coors and Pabst, which was founded in Milwaukee in 1844, but which is now headquartered in Los Angeles, expires in 2020, but provides for two possible five-year extensions. The companies dispute how the extension should be negotiated. Miller Coors argues that it has sole discretion to determine whether it can continue brewing for Pabst, whereas Pabst says the companies must work, quote, in good faith, end quote, to find a solution if Pabst wants to extend the agreement, but Miller Coors lacks the capacity. Pabst needs 4 to 4.5 million barrels brewed annually and claims Miller Coors is its only option. It is seeking more than $400 million in damages and for Miller Coors to be ordered to honor its contract. During 2015 negotiations about extending the contract, Miller Coors announced it would close its brewing facility in Eden, North Carolina, and that it eventually might have to shutter another facility in Irwindale, California. Pabst contends that Miller Coors refused to provide any information to substantiate its claim that it would no longer have the capacity to continue brewing Pabst's beers and that it wouldn't consider leasing the Eden facility and would only sell it for an astronomical price. Pabst says Miller Coors wouldn't agree to an extension unless Pabst paid $45 per barrel, quote, a commercially devastating near triple price increase, end quote, from what it pays now. At the March hearing, Paris said Miller Coors knew Pabst couldn't accept that proposal because it would have bankrupted us three times over. In court filings, Miller Coors said Pabst's proposals to keep the Eden facility open were commercially unreasonable and that Pabst sought a windfall through litigation instead of offering to pay enough to keep the facility open. It also said that the facility's closing was to ensure the long-term sustainability of Miller Coors because thousands of new breweries have entered the market since the past decade. Miller Coors and Anheuser-Busch, which have the biggest U.S. market share at 24.8% and 41.6%, respectively, have been losing business to smaller independent brewers, importers, and wine and spirits in recent years, according to the Brewers Association. Quote, the beer market has shifted and beer lovers are increasingly demanding more variety, fuller flavor, and local products from small and independent producers, said Bart Watson, the Brewers Association's chief economist. End quote. Overall, U.S. beer sales have declined, with shipments down from 213.1 million barrels in 2008 to 204.2 million barrels in 2017, according to the Brewers Association. Pabst depends on Miller Coors because the only other U.S. brewery with capacity to make its products is Anheuser-Busch, which doesn't do contract brewing, Paris said. Quote, it really is an existential issue for Pabst because it has no real alternatives, Paris said at the March hearing. Paris said the report from the consultant Miller Coors hired in 2013 proves the company never intended to act in good faith. Pabst's attorney said the report had sections focused on how to eliminate Pabst altogether and noted that Miller Coors would need to close two breweries to be sure they don't have excess capacity for contract manufacturing. Miller Coors attorney, Eric Van Vugget, said in court that the company didn't rely on the consultant's report when it decided to close Eden or when it has contemplated closing the Irwindale brewery. Quote, if we keep Irwindale open, yes, we can supply their beer, Van Vugt said. No one disputes that. That's the only factor that we need to look at, end quote. Haynes Brewing Company has posted a video on YouTube to announce that it has discontinued offering beer flights at the brewery. The video is entitled, Cheers to Appreciating Craft Beer. The Anchorage Ale House and the Eagle River Ale House have both rebranded as Matanuska Brewing Company Brew Pubs. The Palmer City Ale House is under new ownership and will retain its current name. On Saturday, December 8th, Bear Paw River Brewing Company will celebrate its third anniversary with the release of Old Matanuska Made, its first ever barrel-aged beer. Bottles and draft pours will be available starting at noon. That's it for this month's beer news. Up next, we'll have an interview with Ben Milstein of Kodiak Island Brewing Company. This is Bill Howell, your host for Drinking on the Last Frontier at KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Next up, we've got an interview with Ben Milstein of Kodiak Island Brewing Company. Hey, Ben, how you doing?
Pretty good, Bill. How are you?
Great. How's things on the rock?
Well, it's a beautiful day today, and so that's just lucky. We'll take them when we can get them.
Yeah, I've been there when they have a couple of them weren't quite so beautiful. But yeah, like you say, enjoy them while you can. Hey, a lot of our folks probably, if they haven't been fortunate enough to visit Kodiak, probably aren't familiar at all with Kodiak Island Brewing. Why don't you talk a little bit about your operation there?
Okay, we got started in 2003. It's a 10-barrel system. At that time, you weren't allowed to have a tasting room. So, well, you could offer taste for free, but you couldn't sell pints for on-premise consumption. So it was just growlers and pigs and things like that, kegs. It's a pretty small operation, about 1,500 square feet. And in 2007, I believe, the law changed, and we were, in 2008, allowed to start selling limited pints on-premise. So we got a little bit more space in that building and started doing that. Well, I guess we started doing that and then eventually needed more space in that building. About 6 years ago, I think, we moved into a new building that's just a half mile away, but right in the middle of town. It's a really good location for us, a lot bigger space for tasting rooms, so we're not quite so shoulder to shoulder on Friday nights. We have a wide variety of styles, traditional and experimental, you know, mild, strong or hoppy, smooth. We have some sours on tap occasionally and Brett beers, some barrel-aged stuff. So we like to keep it interesting.
Yeah, as I recall, you guys are right downtown, right next to the McDonald's, right? So good central location.
Yep.
So tell everybody about your background. How did you end up as a commercial brewer in Kodiak?
Well, I just always wonder how you avoid it.
Okay.
I had friends who started breweries both in Alaska and before I got to Alaska in the early 90s. And so seeing other people do it helped me kind of have the attitude that it was in the realm of possibilities. And especially the more I studied brewing and got into home brewing. And I guess it never really occurred to me to start my own brewery until I decided that Kodiak was going to be my permanent home. And the fact that we didn't have a brewery is really what you know, made it seem like a good idea. I used to be in a club in Homer, along with a lot of brewers there, the folks that started Stephen Karen and Lasso started Homer Brewing Company, and Lawrence, who started the first brew pub up in Anchorage, that was at Cusack's, I think, in a hotel. And anyway, a bunch of people from that club went on to do breweries, and they were serious, and so I learned a lot from them before I came to Kodiak. My wife got a job here, and I was a carpenter, and that was fine for a while, but eventually it just seemed like the town needed a brewery, and if nobody else was going to do it, I should.
I always credit you with a phrase that I've stolen and used probably a million times since, the brewery as bakery model. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you mean when you say that?
Well, I guess historically breweries were always thought of as large industrial operations, and after then it was called microbrew before the craft brew term became widespread. After the first microbrew boom, there was more a sense that a brewery didn't have to be a large industrial operation. It could be a small commercial operation that would serve its local area, serve fresh beer. You know, it's kind of the difference between, you know, Wonder Bread and, you know, your corner bakery, where a corner bakery, you don't expect it to see it 15 miles down the road in another town or on another coast. You get it locally, you eat it fresh. And so that was kind of the model I had in mind for the brewery here, that it was a local operation and we just focus on our town and not try to compete with the world of brewers. Just try and do something good for our community.
So specifically, you don't send any of your beer off of Kodiak, correct?
Yeah, not really. I mean, every once in a while, there could be a special occasion where somebody will order something for, you know, and we'll get it out through Alaska Air Cargo or something like that. But it's mostly just, I don't have a distributor. And as you can imagine from Kodiak, the barriers to distribution are significant. And so it would be a little more costly and troublesome than it is already. it's just another business. Not that it couldn't be done from Kodiak, but I guess I'm not the guy to do it. I'm satisfied with what we do and just serving the local community, and I don't have the energy to kind of start another business that would be packaging and distribution and all that entails.
Well, yeah, as it seems to me, looking around the state, there's more than a couple breweries that are basically just following that same model, whether it's Paul Wheeler and Haynes or Stephen Karen and Homer Brewing or Don and Sherry at Grace Ridge. The idea is you're going to brew beer for your local community, and that's that. You know, you're not really looking to become the next Alaskan Brewing Company and distribute into 22 states or anything like that. You're perfectly happy with running a small artisanal business. So, and when people have ask me the question of, geez, do you think we have too many breweries? My question back to them is always, what kind of a brewery are you talking about? Because if we're talking about these small breweries like yours, heck, you could have one in every town if you wanted to, most towns.
Yeah, or more than that, as we've seen in some towns, obviously. So that's exactly my thought. You know, if you want to compete on the supermarket shelf or liquor store shelf, you know, that's ambitious. That's going to require a lot of work and expertise and some small profit margins. But there's nothing to say you can't do it, but I just don't need to go there. You know, one thing about that I always talk about, too, is people say, oh, man, this beer is so good. I wish I could get it in California. But what they don't understand maybe is that we have something I call the home court advantage. When you're brewing fresh, unfiltered beer and it's consumed locally, you have an advantage because you're not having to brew with an eye toward packaging. You're not having to think of shelf stability. This is not going to sit in a closet or on a warehouse floor or in a truck for a week or weeks. So we don't filter. We know when you filter things, you remove things. Obviously, we don't have to pasteurize. So the things you remove when you filter, they have flavor too. And so fresh beer, when you get used to it, it's a little bit of a different product than a filtered, you know, shelf-stable product. And not that those distributed beers are not good. They can be excellent, but a fresh beer is a little bit different, I think.
I agree, absolutely. Drinking Pilsner or Quell in Prague tastes a heck of a lot different than drinking it out of a can that I bought at Freddy's in Soldotna.
I mean,
let's face it, fresh beer is the best beer. Let's talk a little more about your operation. What sort of packaging choices do you offer people? You mentioned, you know, obviously people fill in growlers there, but what else do you offer for people as a way to take home beer from your brewery?
Well, we have a pretty good selection of, you know, different kind of growlers, or some people will call the one-quart containers howlers. You know, we've got plastic and stainless. We have crowlers, you know, the one-quart cans. We have insulated and non-insulated. We have bale top and keg shape. We have, we used to have Party Pigs. We were one of the biggest customers of that company, actually, for many years. But they went out of business about a year ago. Now we use the beer boxes that are 2.5-gallon containers dispensed with CO2 cartridges. Those are good, too. We also have those UKEG stainless insulated beer dispensers. Are you familiar with those?
Oh, I am. Very nice, very nice.
Yeah, kind of the state of the art. You know, they're spendy, but, you know, if you're going to use it for 10 years, then that investment kind of diminishes in seriousness. So those are great. The, you know, integrated CO2 regulator and pressure gauge and sight glass, and those are nice. We use the 1 gallon versions. We have kegs too, of course. I like to have a good variety of stuff here because we've got a big enough system for a small town that brewing capacity isn't really a problem for us. And so just making it convenient and attractive for people, you know, lots of options, it just helps us sell more beers.
So of your flagship styles, that the ones you keep on pretty regularly, do you have a personal favorite?
Well, you know, of course I have beers that I go to a little bit more than others, but, you know, we brew a variety of styles because certain styles run to my personal preference, that's not really the issue. Of course, we brew some beers because that's what I want to brew for myself. And then we brew other beers because either to experiment with a new style or because it's a popular style and we know that people will like it. So, you know, I don't consider my personal preferences really relevant. You know, I try when I brew a style of beer, whether it's one I love or one that I'm not that in love with, you know, the point is to do a good job brewing that style of beer. So try to judge it in context, if you will.
So that's kind of segueing into your brewing philosophy. Other than the idea behind that fresh beer is the best beer, do you have anything else that you would strive for when you're designing a beer or choosing what beer to brew or anything like that?
Well, we use all organic base malts. You know, so that's one thing I like to do. That's not something that's a huge demand in Kodiak, in my market, if you will, but it's important to me. And it's fun to use some local ingredients. So we've gotten into some spruce tip styles and recently did a kelp goza, which was really fun. And, you know, so I like to do some things like that. But I guess my main philosophy, besides brewing things I love and experimenting with new ideas, a couple of things, I suppose. One is I don't brew a pizza beer because I love pizza and I love beer, but I don't think they belong in the same glass together. And so I want something that, even if it's experimental, is going to be good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I see where you're going with that.
Oh, I love garlic, but I don't want it in beer. You know, things like that. I like to be experimental, but not at any cost. let's see, any other philosophical? Well, I guess the rest of it is just based on community. So I want to showcase styles that people have never heard of, maybe, just to be kind of a library of beer, maybe. You know, a place where people can go to learn a little bit more about beers of the world. So, I don't know. Guess I didn't, you know, articulate a single philosophy very well, but I think you can see where I'm coming from anyway.
Yep. No, I gotcha. So, final question. Where do you see Kodiak Island Brewing in 5 years or 10 years? You got any long-range plans, or are you just taking her day to day?
I don't have any huge plans that would change the overall look and feel of the brewery. You know, there are some things I'd like to do. I'd like to add some outdoor seating. I'm having a little bit of trouble locally making that happen. And there's certainly some beer projects I have in mind. You know, we have a barrel program. I'd like to expand that a little bit. We have a sour program. I'd like to expand that a little bit. You know, but these aren't really, they're not giant changes in the way we do things. And I guess I don't have any specific goals to really change the way we do things. Yeah, not at the moment.
Well, all that means is that you're happy and satisfied with what you got, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's going good. And the economy in Kodiak has gone up and down. And so, you know, we'd certainly like to see the fisheries improve. And I think that would be the biggest thing that I would hope for in the next several years. But I'm not sure that we can depend on that. So meanwhile, just kind of keep going at this level and enjoy a beer.
Well, hey, that's not a bad plan. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us, Ben. I really do appreciate it and hope to get back out there to the Rock again before too much longer and see what you got on tap.
Great. Thanks for calling, Bill. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.